Commitment to Excellence podcast. I'm Sean Quimby. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. This is a podcast to help you make a commitment to excellence, to be the best that you can be at whatever it is you choose to pursue in life, and frankly, everything you choose to pursue in life, because what's the point of going halfway? Halfway is usually not good enough, right? I want to help you be the best that you can be. We're going to cover a lot of topics. We're going to come at things from a different direction. Like I said, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I've been a practicing therapist for the past 25 years in a variety of different capacities. So I guess there's my credibility, my foundational credibility for why you might want to listen to me. But it's the framework that I come at this stuff from. Lots of experience working with lots of people, lots of personal trials and tribulations, which brings us to today's topic. So one of the things that I really want to talk a lot about on this podcast is leadership. Leadership, the pursuit of being a great leader. I talk to people about leadership a lot, and I definitely get some pushback from people when they say, well, I'm not a leader. And I don't want to be a leader. I don't want the responsibility. Well, I'm not sure you can't be great at anything and not be a little bit of a leader. Maybe you're someone who doesn't want a title or doesn't think you're ready for a title yet. Fine. You still ought to be leading. You, at the very minimum, you ought to be leading yourself. But maybe you should be leading your family. Maybe you should set an example for yourself, for your coworkers, for your peers. If you want to be a valued employee or even start your own business, be an entrepreneur, you have to have leadership qualities and characteristics. You're going to fall flat on your face. You're certainly not going to be successful. So I really want to challenge folks, and I try every day to challenge people to think about, you're in a leadership position of some kind, whether you want to be or not. And if you know, I guess if you've just kind of checked out of life and you're sitting on the couch waiting for the state check to come in and you've got no skin in the game, the most exciting thing in your life is waiting for the next video game release. Maybe you're not a leader. That's very unfortunate. And I really would like to challenge you to strive for something better than that. My guess is if you're listening to this podcast, it's not who you are. Good. If that is who you are, then I hope you keep listening, because I'm hoping you'll eventually hear something that makes you not want to be that person. But I would challenge you to think about yourself as a leader in some regard. You know, for me, I found myself very early on in leadership positions, which was cool because I wanted to be a leader. I always wanted, as long as I can remember, I wanted to be a leader. Right down to like my Pee Wee football team. I was a captain, my Pee Wee football team, my last year playing Pee Wee football. And I wanted to be a leader. I was captain of a high school football team. I wanted to be a leader. I was not a good leader, as I mentioned in the very first episode, I think, but I wanted to be a leader. And that's an element for success, right? Like, you got to have that drive. It always frustrates me when I talk to young people that don't have it. Yeah, I don't want to be a leader. What? Are you kidding me? Like, fine, you don't want to be one right now, but step up to the plate, put some skin in the game. So very early on, I found myself in leadership positions, whether I was ready for them or not. And as I progressed in that process, I learned very quickly, partly due to trial and error, partly due to frustrating circumstances, and partly because some people just told me I wasn't a very good leader. I might not have said it like that, but that's what they were saying. And I remember early on, I was pretty dumbfounded by it. Like, what do you mean? I'm not a good, like, I'm the boss. Like, you're just supposed to do what I say, and, you know, I'm in charge. So, like, this is how this works, right? You might be surprised to hear that's indeed not how it works. Or at least it's not how it works well. And a disclaimer for anybody listening to this who knows me and maybe has some firsthand or even secondhand knowledge about my leadership skills and abilities, I am not trying to profess that I've got this on lockdown yet. What I am trying to profess is that I want to. I want to be a great leader in every aspect of my life. I want to lead my family. I want to lead the folks that work with me as best as I can. And I want to lead myself. On some level, I want to be a community leader. I have things that I want to get involved in, things that I'm invested in, connected to. Like, I care about them. I want to help. You know, I coach softball. I want to help the girls be successful. I have other ambitions in life that I want to serve my community in a large capacity. That's all leadership stuff. And so the good news for me, I think, was somewhere along the way I discovered that leadership is not just falling into the role, not being in the right place at the right time. There's a lot more to it than that. And while I would argue that some people have inherent skills and abilities, personality characteristics that make leadership easier for them at times, but leadership is a skill like everything else, and anything that's a skill can be taught, learned, developed, honed over time. Thank goodness for me, because if that was not the case, I was in deep trouble and maybe still would be in deep trouble. Leadership's a skill that you can develop, you can increase over time. The way you do that is just like everything else. You get deliberate about it. You focus on it. You hone your skills. You take your strengths and you enhance them. You find your weaknesses and you refine them. You remediate them. You do the best that you can to minimize those things over time and their impact on others. We know we learn from our role models, the people who model things for us. We learn skills and abilities. It starts with our parents, right? That's where we developmentally, we learn most of our skills and how to be in relationships. All of those things start with our parental relationships, especially our mom. But that's where we learn those things. So you're not just born with all those skills and abilities inherently. They have to be refined over time. It's a deliberate practice issue. It's reps over time. So I would argue that over the years, I've had a handful of decent to exceptional leaders, and I have worked with a handful of horrible leaders. One in particular, well, there are several that stand out that were kind of poor leaders. One in particular was one of the most brilliant people I've ever met and had tons of skills and abilities that I will never have. But this individual was what I like to call a do-as-I-say-not-as-I-do guy. So he was always really good at knowing what the right answer was, knowing what the right thing to do was, and he could tell you and was more than happy to do so, to tell you what to do, how to do it, how to be, especially in his presence. If you were in a meeting with him or anything like that, if he saw you looking at your cell phone or what have you, that was going to be a problem. That was his time, and you were being disrespectful to him on his time. He would also just drop in unexpectedly and expect you to drop what you were doing to accommodate him. Really poor leadership qualities. Well, back to the cell phone thing. He would routinely sit there and email and text message people all the time on a cell phone when you were meeting with him in a formal capacity. So he was really good at telling you not to do that, but he was really bad at doing it himself. Therefore, do as I say, not as I do, right? He's a do as I say, not as I do guy. Really poor role model that always did not set well with me, but a really smart guy. This guy could just recall references and research studies and books, and like he can just pull them and quote them, and like uncanny ability to do that. Also could get in a room full of 1,000 people and command their attention for, you know, an hour, hour and a half at a time and make it look easy. I don't know. It probably wasn't easy. He probably spent a lot of time preparing. In fact, he said things that alluded to that. The guy had some unbelievable skills, but he was 110% a do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do guy. So really had a hard time respecting him because of that. But like I said, he was sharp and he knew resources. And he saw me struggling with my leadership role and making some pretty big mistakes that were ignorant, to say the least. And on some level, he must have cared about me. He saw me struggling, and I think he wanted to be help. And he suggested, he never said to me, hey, like, leadership's a skill. You need to hone it and refine it and work on it. But he kind of sort of, in a roundabout sort of way, did. And he's like, hey, have you ever done it? Like, have you ever read any books on leadership? And he said, no. And he recommended one. He recommended a book by a guy named John Maxwell. If you don't know who John Maxwell is, you probably should check him out. He's a prolific author. I bet he's written like 100 books, probably, all kinds of trainings, and leadership is his thing. And this guy warned me. He's like, hey, he's kind of religious, so you might not, you know, some people find him off-putting because he's religious. So I'm gonna give you the same warning he gave me. And that's not, for me, that was not a warning. I didn't care, and in fact, in some way, find it intriguing. But he comes from, he had a leadership position in some big church groups and that kind of thing. And that's sort of how he came on the field, and he started really studying and diving into leadership and began doing teaching and lecturing and writing books on the subject. And he's, you know, he's for sure considered to be an expert. Whether or not he is like the pinnacle expert, I don't know. But he's been a profound influence on my life, personally and professionally. So he recommended this book called The 21 Laws of Leadership. So I grabbed it and I read it. And I will say that of the handful of John Maxwell's books that I've read, The 21 Laws of Leadership is not my favorite. But it was my introduction to thinking about leadership as a skill and as something that I could develop. And maybe it just wasn't inherent, and I was kind of like, I was good at what I was good at, and I wasn't good at what I wasn't good at, and that was just the way it was going to be. He got me thinking. So that book led me to the next book of his that I read, which quite literally changed my life. And I posted a picture of it in my social media, and I'll do it again when I post this episode. But the book I've never read a book more than I've read this book. And I don't know how many times I've read it cover to cover, but it's full of sticky notes and tabs and notes and letters and highlights. And it is just, I've for sure read it cover to cover 3 or 4 times, but I keep going back to it. It's a reference point. I've used it I've done some trainings. I did a really fun leadership at a conference for direct care staff a couple of years ago that I just had a blast with. And this book was sort of the foundation for that talk. So one of the things I want to do on the podcast is talk about some of my favorite books. So to be fair, at this point in time, I am not sure that I would say it's my favorite leadership book. There is another that we will talk about at some point in time that I might give the edge to. But I will say this. This book, without this book, that other book would have been meaningless to me, I think. I think it would not have had the value for me if I hadn't read this book first. So if you came to me and said, hey, Sean, I'm really, like, I'm digging on this leadership stuff you're talking about. I want to learn more. I want to think about this more. I want to do better. I think I can be a better leader. I want to go out and start reading some things. Where do you think I should start? This is where I would tell you should start. It's called The 5 Levels of Leadership by John Maxwell. And it is an amazing book. And he just does such a great job of laying out a foundation for leadership, a framework for looking at it, the way to kind of break it down and think about a leadership progression. I'll go through all that in some detail, but I just want to, this one of the first things I highlighted in the book is this section. It says, it's in the introduction. The five levels of leadership defines learning as a verb, not a noun. Leadership is a process, not a position. There was a time when people used the terms leadership and management interchangeably. I think most people now recognize that there is a significant difference between the two. Management is at best when things stay the same. Leadership deals with people and their dynamics, which are continually changing. They're never static. The challenge of leadership is to create change and facilitate growth. Those require movement, which, as you will soon see, is inherent in moving up one level of leadership to the next. So he talks about, obviously, five levels of leadership. He talks about this framework, five levels of leadership. The idea is that level one is kind of the most basic level of leadership. Level five, highest level of leadership, everything in between. So I wrote notes in the book as I went through it. And this is a note that I wrote. And as I was preparing for this, it grabbed my attention. Leadership is something you do, not something that you are. And that speaks really to the level one leadership. So just a quick overview of what the five levels are. So level one is positional. So it's, you're there. Maybe, you know, I was a level one leader. Like, I had the position. Maybe just simply right place, right time. It doesn't necessarily mean you have any skills. But in my case, I think what I had was drive, desire, some level of work ethic. And I like to think a high level of work ethic. And I had checked the boxes. You know, so after I got out of grad school, I had a master's degree, had a bachelor's degree. Like, there are boxes in my field that just have to be checked, right, wrong, or indifferent. To do certain things, to have certain roles, you've got to check certain boxes. And I checked the boxes. So that's a positional leader. And that, there's the basic level of leadership. And if you rely on that, you will not be ultra successful. So just real quickly, the next level is permission and relationships. So, like, generally people like you at this level. And, you know, for me, I didn't do very well at that early on. Level three is production. So you're getting results. You're doing things. You'll model things. You're the guy that isn't afraid to, like, scrub the toilet if the toilet needs to get scrubbed. If you've got stuff to do, you're going to do it. You're going to dive in. You're going to do it with people. And that's a production leader. And people will, generally speaking, they'll do the same for you. Level four is people development. So you're reproducing. You are helping to create leaders. People will follow you because of what you have done for them. And they respect you, and they want to go to battle with you, to be on the front lines. Then level five is the pinnacle, as John calls it, which is all about respect, and people follow you because of who you are and what you represent. And you're also, when you get to level five, you are developing, you are able to develop level four leaders, right? You're able to develop other people that are going to develop other people so that the system is able to recreate itself. So I'm a big believer in the philosophy that nobody's irreplaceable. You might be surprised to hear that when I spent all or most of my time as a level one leader, I indeed thought I wasn't for sure irreplaceable. Now I know I'm not. And in fact, If I get, I like to say this a lot. If I get hit by a bus tomorrow, and there is not someone that can step up and at least kind of sort of do my job, then I have failed as a leader. And I don't want to do that. And if you have enough time, right, creating, you know, I've got 25 plus years of experience in varying ways in my field. So nobody can be in the field for 2 years and know everything I know and have all the experience that I have. But if I've got 5 to 10 years to mentor somebody, and I currently have two people that I supervise right now that I've supervised for the last 5 years. So, you know, at some point in time, if one of them or both of them are not in a place where they are willing and able and capable to step up and cover for me, I haven't done a very good job. And, you know, I never used to buy that. When I was a level one leader, I really strongly felt like, well, I was irreplaceable and I needed to be irreplaceable. And if there was anybody else around me that I thought could replace me, I was terrified by that because, well, then I was replaceable. And I, you know, looking back on it, I squandered a pretty good relationship with a really sharp clinician because we were kind of, we were at the same place kind of sort of in our career for a while. And, you know, we were sort of jockeying for position. And, you know, he and I probably should have been like best buddies and allies. And it, truth be told, we complemented each other really, really well. Like things he's really good at, I was not really good at. And I would argue vice versa. But we had this competitive relationship that, you know, I think we both wanted the same thing. And, you know, anyway, that became a problem for us when it should have been, you know, had I been the leader that I want to be, had I been the leader that I hope I am now, I would have embraced his presence because he, in a lot of ways, he made us better. But instead, I saw it as this competitive thing, and it just wasn't healthy. And, you know, eventually, one of us was going to leave eventually. And, you know, I guess fortunately or unfortunately, it wasn't me that left. But I miss him. And we do not have the relationship that I wish we had still to this day. Like if we see each other, we're cool and we're civil and, you know, we've met up at conferences and stuff and had dinner and, you know, but we're not like buddies. And I know that it's because of how I conducted myself in that relationship. And it's just, it's a bummer, you know, like I send him referrals and whatnot. And I think under the right circumstances, he'd do the same for me, but like, you know, we should probably be friends. And I don't think we are. You know, if you ask me, I would say so. I'm not sure if you asked him, he'd say the same thing. And that's kind of a bummer. I mean, we were both young guys in our late 20s, early 30s, like kind of still doing the ego thing a little bit. And, you know, it was unfortunate. I think if we worked together now, it'd be different, at least for me anyway, it would be different. But that's a level one leader mindset, right? Like I'm the boss, follow me because you're supposed to follow me. And I, you know, to be fair, had some supervisors like that. So, you know, I guess I could argue that, well, that's what I was taught to do. But the reality is that there was just lazy leadership on my part. All right, let's go to the book here real quick. Level one position. Position is the lowest level of leadership, the entry level. The only influence a positional leader has is that which comes with the job title. People follow because they have to. Positional leadership is based on the rights granted by the position and title. Nothing is wrong with having a leadership position. Everything is wrong with using the position to get people to follow. Position is a poor substitute for influence. People who make it only to level one may be bosses, but they are never leaders. They have subordinates, not team members. They rely on rules, regulations, policies, and organization charts to control their people. Their people will only follow them within the stated boundaries of their authority, and their people will usually do only what is required of them. When a positional leader asks for extra effort or time, they rarely get it. Positional leaders usually have difficulty working with volunteers, younger people, and the highly educated. Why? Because positional leaders have no influence, and these types of people tend to be more independent. Position is the only level that does not require ability and effort to achieve. Anyone can be appointed to a position. So the good news, you're on level one, like you're at the party. You've arrived and you have the opportunity. And you can move up. I think that's important. Don't have to stay there. I like to think I'm a good example of that. All right, level two. Level two is permission. Level two is based entirely on relationships. So people here like you. That's a good thing. On the permission level, people follow you because they want to. When you like people and treat them like individuals who have value, you begin to develop influence with them. You develop trust. The environment becomes much more positive, whether at home or on the job, at play or while volunteering. The agenda for leaders on level two isn't preserving their position. It's getting to know their people and figuring out how to get along with them. Leaders find out who their people are. Followers find out who their leaders are. People build solid, lasting relationships. You can like people without leading them, but you cannot lead people well without liking them. That's what level two is about. This has been a really important thing for me, figuring out genuinely caring for people, liking people. Not that I ever necessarily disliked people, but early on I was not super invested in relationships, and you know, now I am, and I think I'm a much better leader for it. And that it just didn't come naturally to me. I had to work at it, and this was part of it. So level three is production. One of the dangers of getting the permission level is that a leader may be tempted to stop there. But good leaders don't just create a pleasant working environment. They get things done. That is why they must move up to level three, which is based on results. On the production level, leaders gain influence and credibility, and people begin to follow them because of what they have done for the organization. Many positive things begin to happen when leaders get to level three. Work gets done, morale improves, profits go up, turnover goes down, and goals are achieved. It is also on level three that momentum kicks in. Leading and influencing others becomes fun on this level. Success and productivity have been known to solve a lot of problems. As legendary former NFL quarterback Joe Namath said, when you're winning, nothing hurts. On level three, leaders can become change agents. They can tackle tough problems and face thorny issues. They can make the difficult decisions that will make a difference. They can take their people to another level of effectiveness. So this is where things start to happen, right? And I think as you're moving along this continuum, think about it like you don't get to level three and you just stay there. You move around, you move back and forth. I have days where days and situations where I'm prone to just fall back into that level one kind of thinking. And level three is probably kind of, you know, level three and level four is where I spend most of my time at this point. I want to be a level five leader. That's where I want to be. Level two is probably the one that comes the most difficult to me in the workplace. So I have to work on it. I have to pay attention to it. And, you know, I have over the years, and it's certainly helped me out a lot. Level four, people development. Leaders become great, not because of their power, but because of their ability to empower others. That is what leaders do on level four. They use their position, relationships, and productivity to invest in their followers and develop them until those followers become leaders in their own right. The result is reproduction. Level four leaders reproduce themselves. If I get hit by a bus, who's there waiting for me? He didn't say that. I like to talk about the bus stuff, but So the book, production may win games, but people development wins championships. Two things always happen on level four. First, teamwork goes to a very high level. Why? Because a high investment in people deepens relationships, helps people to know one another better, and strengthens loyalty. Second, performance increases. Why? Because there are more leaders on the team and they help to improve everybody's performance. Level four leaders change the lives of the people they lead. Accordingly, their people follow them because of what their leaders have done for them personally and the relationships they offer are often lifelong. That's pretty powerful stuff. And you can have that mindset and not officially be in a leadership position. I talk about this a lot with, there are folks on our team who I know want to be leaders, but they've been around for a while. But instead of lifting up their team members around them, they kind of like push them down. And I think one person in particular who I'm thinking of, I think that he thinks that he makes himself look good by doing that. But what he's doing is showing me he's not ready to be a leader yet. Because what he'd really do if he wanted to be a leader and he was going to be a good leader is he'd lift that person up and he'd try to help this other, just this, the person he clashes with, like on an almost daily basis. And what he's trying to do is show us all that he's better than this other person. But what he's actually doing is, you know, he's pushing this other person down, not helping them. And he's saying to me, he's not ready to be a leader. And to be fair, I did the same thing when I was a young man. But people are asking him to, like, look at that and see it and make an adjustment. And for whatever reason, he's not either willing or able to do that. So level five, here's the top level, the pinnacle. The highest and most difficult level of leadership is the pinnacle. While most people can learn to climb to levels 1 through 4, skill development, right? Level 5 requires not only effort, skill, and intentionality, but also a high level of talent. Only naturally gifted leaders ever make it to this highest level. What do leaders do on level 5? They develop people to become level 4 leaders. If people are respectful, pleasant, and productive, they can establish a degree of influence with others and gain followers with relative ease. Developing followers to lead on their own is difficult. Most leaders don't do it because it takes so much more work than simply leading followers. However, developing leaders to a point where they are able and willing to develop other leaders is the most difficult leadership task of all. But here are the payoffs. Level 5 leaders develop level 5 organizations. They create opportunities that other leaders don't. They create legacy in what they do. That's a powerful word for me, powerful thought process, legacy. People follow them because of what they are, because of who they are and what they represent. In other words, their leadership gains a positive reputation as a result. Level 5 leaders often transcend their position, their organization, and sometimes their industry. That's pretty cool. I think. I don't know if I'll ever be a level 5 leader, but I'd like to be. So that's an overview of the 5 levels of leadership. I think, for me anyway, it's important to think about these as fluid, right? Because there are days when I do a lot of level 4 things, so it would be really easy for me to think, well, I'm a level 4 leader. Check. But if I'm being honest, there are days when I, you know, do level 3 things, which is cool. Like, if you're at level 3 all the time, you're doing all right. It's not where I want. I want to be at least at level 4. But, you know, like, there are situations when I drop back to level 1, or I want to drop back to level 1, right? Like, I found myself I caught myself doing this today. I was in a meeting this morning, and a staff person asked an innocent question that it was you know, ignorant in some ways. And, you know, I mean that in the true sense of the word, right? I know we use that as a derogatory comment. We say someone's ignorant. We're intended to not be nice. That's, I mean it literally, like lack of knowledge and information. This person was ignorant, made a comment and said, hey, is that what's going on here? And I said, no. And I was kind of curt about it. I said, no, that's not what's going on here. That's the wrong way for us to look at it. And it would be the wrong way to frame it for the person in question. And that was the end of it. I just said that. And, you know, I think she felt like I was just trying to tell her to shut up. I caught myself and I was like, oh, yeah, that was what I need to do here is explain myself a little bit better. Because she needs to understand why I said that, not that I just told her to shut up. So the conversation flowed as soon as it got to a natural point. I was like, hey, time out. I want to come back to, you know, so-and-so. Hey, I just wanted to follow up on that comment. You know, I kind of shut you down there really quick, and that wasn't my intention. What I need to explain myself a little bit better. So there's two reasons why I said what I said, A and B. Here they are. Does that make sense? Oh, yeah, that does make sense. Thanks for saying that. You know, I appreciate it. And she basically said, again, my words, not hers. Yeah, I felt like you were just telling me to shut up, which is exactly, like, I know why. That was not my intention at all. I wanted to make it clear to everybody that what the direction she was going was off course. And I did that, but I didn't do it in a very nice way. When I came back to it and I actually explained my position in a way that I think made a lot of sense, it was cool. So I think I had a level one moment there. And then I hope I followed it up with at least a level three, but maybe a level four moment. Cause I corrected, you know, I coached her up on the position in a way that made sense. And I also think I took some public ownership of a place that I came up short. I do that all the time. And, you know, my intention is never to do it in a way that's hurtful to everybody. And whether it, you know, I think it depends on the person, how they take that stuff, right? Like some people can roll up with that pretty well. And, you know, depending on the situation, I would or wouldn't, right? Maybe, you would or wouldn't, depending on the situation. But a good leader teaches the why there, right? Like, and I didn't do that initially. I came back to it. And I hope that I role modeled, like, making a self-correction. And I didn't impale myself on the sword of despair, you know, for everybody to see. But I did correct, and I took some ownership. And, you know, these things happen all the time. I think if I was a level four and a level five leader all the time, I wouldn't make those mistakes. I don't want to, but I'm human, right? And, you know, 20 years ago, I lived on level one all the time. And now I'm bouncing around, you know, I'm bouncing back and forth. I hope I spend most of my time on level three and level four. So you can see, at least for me anyway, that looking at it this way is so helpful. And I kind of, it's like a measuring stick for myself, like where am I at? And if I'm being objective, I'm able to kind of take a look and see where my strengths are, my weaknesses are. And I'm able to use this format to do that. Super powerful for that. And I genuinely want to live on level, you know, four and five. I don't know if I'll get there. But I love that notion of legacy, where he talks about legacy in level five. Like, you're building a legacy if you're a level five leader. I want to do that. I want to build a legacy. I want people to remember me. If I get hit by a bus tomorrow, not only do I want there to be people to fill my void and, you know, have things going smoothly, because that's my legacy, right? Like, I've spent 23 years building her, helping to build some of what I'm talking about here. And I want it to continue on. And if it continues on well, strongly, then maybe the past 23 years was for nothing, right? So if I get hit by a bus, or I decide I want to go do something else for a while or whatever, it reflects well on me if everything goes smoothly. And like I said, years and years ago, I remember thinking, if I leave, this place is just, it's just going to fall apart. And I will show them, right? Like, that's probably a pretty common thing for a 23-year-old guy to think. It's not a good thing for a 48-year-old guy to think. So just something to think about. Here's a little bit more from the book about level four. So level four, you know, level four, level five, that's where we probably ought to be. It's where I want to be. So here's a little more from the book. Good leaders on level four invest their time, energy, money, and thinking into growing others as leaders. They look at every person and try to gauge his or her potential to grow and lead, regardless of the individual's title, position, age, or experience. Every person is a potential candidate for development. This practice of identifying and developing people compounds the positives of their organization, because bringing out the best in a person is often a catalyst for bringing out the best in the team. And I would argue in myself, in yourself. Developing one person for leadership and success lays the foundation for developing others. Here's a little more, a little further on. How does this emphasis on people and people decisions translate into action? Leaders on the people development level of leadership shift their focus from the production achieved by others to the development of their potential. And they put only 20% of their focus on their personal productivity while putting 80% of it on the developing and leading others. This can be a difficult shift for highly productive people who are used to getting their hands dirty. But it's a change that can revolutionize an organization and give it a much brighter future. And I guess I'd add to that, right? Like, so in my current role, I've got stuff. I've got boxes I've got to check. I've got deliverables, for a lack of a better. I have things I have to accomplish. That's a distraction at times from mentoring, and I need to compartmentalize those things and try not to be distracted and focused when I'm giving my time and attention to others. And that's why, yeah, at times we have kind of a small, you know, the business I'm in is on the smaller end of the continuum, and the team is small. It's pretty informal. There's not a ton of bureaucracy and overhead. The upper level leadership team is really small. So that affords us a lot of luxuries. And so we're pretty informal with things. So what that means is that any of the people that I formally supervise, they can pick up the phone anytime they want and they can call me. And I just expect them to do that. So for a while, I was pretty sloppy about formalizing my supervision time with them, like blocking off supervision time with them. And when you do that, it just makes the whole thing sloppy. So in the last couple of years, I've gotten much more formal about that, which is, you know, there's downfalls to that. But when I block off time for them, formal supervision, and I do that with them, right? Like, I'm pretty good. Like, we have set times and we meet pretty much every week. But I try to check in with them every week. Hey, is that, you know, our usual time going to work? If it's not going to work, like, let's connect some other time. And that seems to be really helpful. It makes a space for some deliberate practice around that supervision and mentoring role. And I think it's really important. You know, if sometimes it feels a little hokey, a little stuffy, like, oh, we have to, you know, sit down and do an hour of formal supervision. But if we don't do it, it's not going to happen. If we don't make it deliberate, it's not going to happen. And then that process is just going to get really sloppy and casual. And that's not me being a good mentor. It's not me giving them what they need. Even if it's just, you know, there are some weeks that we more just shoot the breeze. And I think that's relationship building. That's connectedness. That's like, they know that I'm making time in my week for them. We can kind of do what they want with it. Sometimes I've got X's and O's that we have to go through, but usually it's like, hey, this is your hour. What do you want to do with it? And I think that's really important to be deliberate about that process. That's what a good leader does, or that's what a good leader should do. Something else I want to add about a level four leader, level five leader. High-level leaders don't run away from, and I sort of alluded to this earlier on, high-level leaders don't run away from talented people. And again, full disclosure, I know I did when I was younger, because I was threatened by them. and I know I have an acquaintance, so someone that I would have called a friend at one point in time, who's very, very successful from a business standpoint. Sometimes I wonder how and why. I mean, I know how and why. There was some right place, right time. Like, this person's like super smart, very intelligent, super driven, very motivated, but in a lot of ways, I think is a level one leader. And I have literally seen this person run from talented people. For the most part, he surrounds himself with, I think he's gotten better in recent years as I've sort of drifted away from him a bit. I think he's gotten better at having talent around him because he's secured his leadership position. But I watched him for years, and you know, I did the same thing, to be fair. It's just easier to see somebody else do it. I watched him run from talented people, push them away. I know it was because he felt threatened by him. I know, you know, that guy that I talked about earlier in the podcast who was a colleague, and you know, in a lot of ways I respected and trusted him. Like, I pushed him away in a lot of ways. I mean, there were other factors too. It wasn't just me, but part of it was me, and I know I did that because I felt threatened by it. Like, he was talented. I saw his talents. I knew there were things he was good at that I wasn't, and yeah, I was threatened by him. That's not what a good leader does. A good leader brings those people in, tries to develop them. So don't run from talent. If you're in a leadership position, if you're trying to grow a leadership position, if you're trying to build a team, don't run from talent. Talent will make you better. You need to make sure your people have the resources that they need. You need to make sure that your people have the support that they need, the education, the training. That's what a good level four, even a level three leader would do. So another characteristic that I think about for a high-level leader, and this is a tough one, right? But it's giving the credit to everybody else. Showing praise and respect and attaboys. You know, I kind of talked about this in the last episode a little bit, being a cheerleader for people. When the team wins, a good leader accepts little to none of the success of the team. That's hard. Everybody wants a pat on the back. I want a pat on the back. I'm 48 years old. I'm a grown up. But it's nice. It's nice to have a pat on the back once in a while. And unfortunately, some agencies are not good at that. The pats on the back. And I'm not a trophy generation person. Like, I don't believe that every time you do something that you're supposed to do, there's a trophy that should come along. But telling people good job, that's really important. People need to hear it. People need to know you care. When something goes well, a great leader will tell everybody why everybody else deserves the credit for whatever it was that went well. So think about that. Give the credit away. Don't look for it to come on you. Hard thing to do, but it's what a good leader would do. A good leader finds the strengths in people and emphasizes them. Kind of, you know, think about people's strengths as like a fire, and you're fanning the flames, man. You're just pouring gas on that fire, trying to inspire people to grow. Never ceases to amaze me how few people I find in my work that want the fan's flame. I just really feel like a lot of people don't want that, but every once in a while you find somebody that does. Pump them up, fan their flames, build that fire. Think about your legacy. That has helped me profoundly over the last few years, I guess, as I've more and more faced the reality of my mortality and had some health and physical struggles, right? I'm of the mindset that I am going to die someday. We all are, right? I want to be the best that I can be, but I want to be remembered for as long as I can be. And I know there are some cultures that talk about you're not actually dead until the last person speaks your name for the last time. I want to live forever. I know that's not realistic, but I want to live as long as I can. And that's one way I can do it. I want people to remember me. And again, like, I got it. I'm not perfect. I agitate people every day. I know that I at least temporarily hurt that gal's feelings today, which is a bummer because I love her attitude. Like, she's grown so much in the last year or so, and she just gets after it. And I kind of, at least for a moment, sort of squashed her like a bug, and I did it in front of everybody. That's not who I want to be. That's not how I want to be remembered. If those situations are the exception, not the rule, then I won't be remembered for that. I'll be remembered for, you know, how I went back and fixed it and how I propped her up and how I taught her and I educated her and I showed a little humility. That's how I want to be remembered. But a great leader, I think, thinks about that and incorporates themselves, that mindset, into their work in every aspect of your life, right? Like with your family, I want to be seen as the patriarch of my family. I'm not yet, but I want to be seen that way. And, you know, I think I'm ready to fill that role when and if the time comes. I want to be seen that way at work, in any business endeavor that I take on, any path that I choose. I want people to remember that I did something special, that I made a difference, that I helped build future leaders. Even if I don't get hit by a bus, I'm for sure going to retire someday. I want there to be people in my professional space that are rocking it, kicking butt and taking names. And I want them to tell stories about me, but I want them to be good ones, right? Like, I've got a couple of supervisors that come up in conversation all the time that were my supervisors in the past. And the stories we talk about, they're not usually good ones. They're kind of not good stories usually. That is not how I want people to talk about me. That's not how I want to be remembered. So that is why I'm striving every day to be the best leader that I can be. And why I want you to do that too. Even if you're not in a leadership position formally at work, right? Like, you're not the boss, you're not the supervisor. That's okay. You don't have to be. There are people at my workplace, my primary workplace, who are not supervisors, but they have good leadership qualities and they exercise them on a daily basis. They make the team better. They are valued team members. And there's one or two of them that I can think, like, they're probably never going to be leaders. They're probably never going to be in a supervisor type position, but they are still leaders. So, like, what I say, not leader in title, but they take on, they mentor staff, they teach, they're key people and, you know, super invaluable in their own way to the culture of the agency. And, you know, even if you don't want to be the boss, and I would argue you should never want to be the boss, even if you don't want to be a leader, you're still a leader. You ought to be. So I invite you to think about it that way, and I invite you to see leadership as a skill that you can develop over time and get better at. Just like everything else, just like throwing a softball, hitting a baseball, catching a football, it's all about the deliberate practice over time, the reps that you put in. Leadership's the same way. This is one of the reasons that I'm doing this podcast. I'm putting in extra reps. Me talking about this stuff is getting reps. Me teaching you about this stuff is getting reps. Hopefully, somebody's going to get something out of this conversation, and you're going to tell me about it someday. And that's going to give me positive reinforcement. And I'm going to grow as a leader as a result. That's what it's all about. That's why I'm doing this. Hopefully, I'm building my legacy. Hopefully, I'm improving my leadership skills. Hopefully, I'm being a better person. Hopefully, I am actively making a commitment to excellence, to be the best person that I can be. So, right, this is John Maxwell's a brief overview of John Maxwell's 5 levels of leadership. I highly recommend it, especially if you're just kind of getting started and you're looking for a framework to make sense of and understand leadership. It's a great place to start. So go out and get it. I'll put a link to a couple of his books in the show notes. And just as a side note, if you click on those links, if you ever buy the book or I think anything else from Amazon when you click on those links, I'll get a little kickback, probably pennies on the purchase. but that's an affiliate link. So there's one little thing you can do to help me out. So I appreciate it. You know, in addition to sharing the shows, I keep seeing new people share the shows, and that's so cool, man. I so appreciate it. I can't tell you how much, and I keep getting, you know, little messages, people saying they listened and they heard this and they heard that, and little mistakes that I make here and there. And, you know, the other day, I think I got it down before everybody but one person and me heard it, but I put up an episode that played the intro like three times back to back. It was horrible. I still don't know how I messed it up, but I did. I'm still learning. It's episode 11, but I'm putting in the reps, and I'm getting better, and I'm having a good time, and I'm getting some good feedback. So thanks for sharing the show. I really appreciate it. If you ever do buy any of these books or anything, use that link that I put in there. It's a little thing you can do to support and help out. That's cool. I appreciate it. Check us out. Instagram page, Commitment to Excellence. Facebook group, Commitment to Excellence. Like I said, there's still a Facebook group's not really alive yet, but it's there, and there are more people checking it out, so that's great. This past week has been my biggest download week so far, so I'm pretty excited. I'm super appreciative anyway, having a good time. I hope you're enjoying this. I'm having a blast. So thanks a bunch. I hope you're in the process of making today great.